brother, mainstream media, government cover-ups. You want answers? Well, so does he. He's Alex Jones on the GCN Radio Network. And now, live from Austin, Texas, Alex Jones.
It's well known that I don't gush over guests. But I got to tell you, being over in England a month and a half ago covering the tragic London bombings, I had a chance to interview a former MI5 agent and, of course, his partner, David Shaler. And I had a chance to interview, you know, hundreds of Londoners on the street. But getting to go to the home of Member of Parliament Michael Meacher, who was a member of the Blair cabinet and who resigned on the eve of the Second Gulf War in 93. He was just such a gentleman, and it was an amazing interview. Because it was so important, we put excerpts of it on the website, Infowars.com and PrisonPlanet.com, and that's going to be in an upcoming documentary that we're going to be airing in different areas of the United States. But we are joined by Michael Meacher, who is in London, and we're going to talk about the London bombings. We're going to talk about 9/11. We're going to talk about the lies that led us into the war and the continual lies today here in the next 60 minutes, and we're going to open the phones up. Mr. Meacher, it's great to have you with us.
I'm very pleased indeed to be with you.
Before we get going, what is near and dear to your heart? What do you think the most important thing currently happening is that we should discuss?
I think the consequences of 9/11 continue to resonate across the world, and for those of us who believe that the attack on Iraq was done, it was unprovoked, it was illegal, and it was done on the back of 9/11 on the grounds that there was a connection between 9/11 and Iraq, which there certainly is not, never been proven, and in view of what has happened in Iraq ever since, the geopolitical effects of this, of course, a massive impact in Britain as well. Much talk about whether it could affect the tenure of Prime Minister Blair, and of course the continuing effects in the United States, which combined, I suppose, with Katrina and the whole issue of the Kyoto Protocol and climate change. I mean, these are massive issues, and I am one of those who believe passionately that we need a very different kind of world order, other than the one which is being put forward by Western leaders at the present time. And I think the way events are shaping are increasingly pushing the world in that direction.
When you talk about a world order, Bush and his neocon cronies and his corporate controllers, they want a new world order. And then you have people in the EU and others that talk about another type of world order. And, of course, later we can debate whether the same individuals control both of those world orders. But in a nutshell, what is the world order that George Bush wants?
Well, I think the world order that he is seeking has been made very clear. It is in the document called Project for the New America Century, which was published in the September 2000 presidential election that brought President Bush into office. It was supported by, of course, all the leading neocons, Cheney, Rumsfeld, Wolfowitz, Jeb Bush, Lewis Libby, and all the others. Now, what it says very clearly, and this is their sort of manifesto, I think, for the Bush presidency, it refers to the fact that the U.S. must discourage advanced industrial nations. For that, I presume one means Japan and the EU, from challenging our leadership or even aspiring to a larger regional or global role. It says, even, and this is very significant, even should Saddam pass from the scene, U.S. bases in Saudi Arabia and Kuwait will remain permanently. And this is the reason given, because Iran may well prove to be as large a threat to U.S. interests as Iraq has.
Michael Meacher, stay right there. We've got a break. We'll be right back.
There
word is a secret that holds the world's destiny in its grasp. Hello, my friends. Alex Jones here. Learn that secret with my new film, Martial Law, 9/11 Rise of the Police State. Martial Law plumbs the depths of the New World Order's ideology, their philosophy. Out of the ashes of the September 11th tragedy, a dark empire of war and tyranny has risen. The Constitution has been shredded, and America is now a police state. This film exposes not just who was behind the 9/11 attacks, but the roots and history of its orchestrators. Martial Law is a blazing spotlight piercing the electronic Berlin Wall of controlled corporate media. Plumb the depths of the elite's minds, their ideology, their driving philosophy, and uncover the power-mad cult of death that is sworn to turn the Earth into a prison planet. Discover the document of truth for yourself before it's too late. Call toll-free to get a copy of Martial Law. 1-888-253-3139. Or visit InfoWars.com and the secure shopping cart. That's InfoWars.com or 888-253-3139. Or watch the film right now online at PrisonPlanet.tv.
Berkey water filters are the ultimate filters used worldwide for normal or hostile filtration environments to provide the most delicious, sparkling, clean water possible. The Berkey Light self-sterilizing filter elements remove pathogenic bacteria, cysts, parasites, chemicals, and they reduce lead, mercury, aluminum, nitrate, sulfur, odors, foul tastes, and much, much more. Yet they leave in the nutritional minerals that your body needs. The Berkey Light has ridges to deflect water if the upper chamber is overfilled, and it can be used anywhere on a flat surface. That's because it has an elevated base. The entire system joins together to make the Berkey Light convenient to transport even while it's filtering water. Its rechargeable bright white LED lamps allow for optimum use at night or during emergency conditions. Get the Berkey Light, the ultimate filter, for only $259 by calling New Millennium at 888-803-4438. That's toll-free 888-803-4438. Not yet available in Iowa. So what's in your shampoo, bath soap, and dish soap? Chlorides, dyes, ethanol, sulfates, sodiums, formaldehydes, etc.? Read the labels. Inhaling exposure can lead to coughing, wheezing, shortness of breath, headache, and nausea. Also may be irritating to the skin and mucous membranes and cause you to seek medical help. Perfumes, also known as fragrance on a label, can indicate the presence of thousands of separate ingredients. Now, just by one example, here's what's in my Calben Pure Soap Shampoo. It's all natural, earth-friendly, it contains extra virgin cocoa butter oils and vegetable protein oils. No harsh chemicals, no animal tallow or testing. So what are you waiting for? Call now, 1-800-340-7091, and find out how a family of four can save over $1,000 per year on all their cleaning products with Calben Pure Soaps. Call Calben toll-free at 1-800-340-7091. That's 800-340-7091, or visit calbenpuresoap.com.
The Genesis Communications Radio Network proudly presents The Alex Jones Show, because there's a war on for your mind.
All right, for stations that just joined us, Michael Meacher was a senior member of Blair's cabinet, his environment minister. And I had a chance to sit down with Michael Meacher for about an hour in a video interview I did for a documentary I'm making when I was in England a few months ago. But we are extremely honored to have him here on air with us today to talk about a whole host of issues. You know, he wrote an article a couple years ago for the London Guardian, "The War on Terror is Bogus," where he went over the PNAC plans and where he talked about General Mahmoud Ahmed meeting with the heads of intelligence and basically all the suspicious goings-on that developed there. And, of course, he's better known for resigning from the Blair government on the eve of the invasion of Iraq simply because, on its face, it was a manifestly illegal war. Now, in hindsight, we know just how incredibly illegal it was, and how intelligence was manufactured at the White House, at the Pentagon, at 10 Downing Street. And even Colin Powell has had to apologize and said that his speech at the United Nations is a black mark on his record. And I agree with George Galloway, who we had on last Friday, also a member of Parliament, when he said it's a big bloody mark. It is not a black mark. And so for the next 50 minutes, roughly, we are joined by Michael Meacher. Michael, if we can, let's go back to the eve of the Gulf War, why you gave up this incredibly powerful position with all of the esteem that came with it to resign out of Blair's government. Why did you do that? And now, you may think that the public all knows the tales of the Iraq War. A lot of them don't, especially from your unique position from the catbird seat in British government. So, give us the climate that caused you to resign, and then, in hindsight, your comments on Iraq, and now where you see us going in the future with Iran and Syria. The neocons aren't done yet.
Well, first of all, the war started on, I think, the 19th of March, 2003, as you said, just over 2 years ago. We did not have any debate in the British Parliament until, I think, the night before. There had been enormous resistance building up in the Labour Party, the governing party in Britain. There have been demands for an explanation. There have been continuous demands to Tony Blair as the Prime Minister at question time in Parliament every Wednesday to explain whether a decision had been taken, why we were going to war, when there wasn't a second resolution in the UN which justified it. The lawyers were clearly very dubious about it. We now know that the Foreign Office senior lawyers have later resigned on the grounds that they believe that there was not the justification. Now, on the day of the actual debate, just before war started, 139 Labour MPs voted against a three-line whip. A three-line whip is a requirement laid down by the leaders of the party that you have to obey the vote and support the government. So this was an enormous revolt. And, of course, there were several people from the government who resigned, but there was a huge number of people in the Parliamentary Labour Party, well over a third, who believed that this was a wrongful war, that it was unprovoked and it was illegal. And it was in those circumstances that many of us acted.
And have you been vindicated?
Well, I think we have been totally vindicated. To a degree to which at that time I think most of us were not aware. I have to say, and I'll be honest about this, I believed what was said by the US and the UK government about weapons of mass destruction at that time, when of course we now know that neither the US government nor the UK government actually believed at that time what they were saying. We know that Richard Perle, one of the neocons, has let the cat out of the bag by saying that, of course, it never was about weapons of mass destruction. The US government never believed this. And in the case of the UK, we know that MI5, which is our secret intelligence agency, was warning the Prime Minister that the evidence on which he was basing his case was weak and fragmentary. Civil servants and the scientists who were most knowledgeable in the area were very uncertain as to what weaponry Saddam Hussein had. And indeed, MI6 was warning the Prime Minister that to go to war, if one was worried about terror in the world, it would actually increase the prospects of Islamic terror rather than reduce it. Now, this is what they were being told privately and secretly, but that's not what they were saying publicly. And I think we have been totally and utterly vindicated. I think Iraq has turned out to be a complete disaster. I think it's going to be incredibly difficult to get out of it, but I think this is an unwinnable war. I think the insurgency is probably actually steadily increasing. And I think in the end there is going to have to be a withdrawal, but I hope that is on the basis of a government which is able to keep some law and order within the country. But given the divisions between the Sunni, the Shia, and the Kurds, and the way enormous efforts are being made by the American authorities to bring them together, and of course I support those efforts, but they are clearly up to now wholly unsuccessful. And I think it has unleashed an attitude amongst the Muslim population around the world in many of the Arab countries, which has severely damaged the image of America and of Britain. I think we need to be very careful about saying exactly what lay behind the Madrid bombings or the London bombings. I think it's very facile to say it was for this reason or that, But I don't think there is any doubt at all that the slaughter in Iraq and the television pictures and all the newscasts that we've heard in this country and Europe undoubtedly were one of the factors, and perhaps a key factor, which lay behind the bombers. It is terrible that this has happened. But, of course, the real problem is there is not necessarily any end of it. Whether I trust God there are going to be no further bombings in the UK, but, of course, none of us knows. And exactly the same must be true in the US.
Again, we're talking to Michael Meacher, who was at the highest levels of the Blair government and resigned on the eve of the war. Michael, is it fair to say that you and the third of the Labour Party and even some conservatives and Tories who were against it were against it because Saddam clearly wasn't a threat, but at the same time you say that you were believing the government, Blair's government, when he said that they knew they had the weapons? I mean, why specifically were you against the war if you were believing their line about WMDs?
Well, I believed what the Prime Minister said in statements he made to the House of Commons. One always assumes that the leader of a country has received the top intelligence briefings, rather like the PBD, PDB, President Daily Briefing in the United States, that the leader is giving the very best information which is available, and that it is as accurate as it is possible to be. I just assumed that was true. And when we have lists of the alleged weaponry that Saddam Hussein had, I believed that he must have it, and there could be some threat involved. What we now know is that those were lists of munitions which were unaccounted for. In other words, lists of weapons that he was thought to have had at the end of the first Gulf War in 1991, but which are unaccounted for since. And of course, as we now know, they were all destroyed. We were told that by the son-in-law of Saddam Hussein, who reneged to the West, and who made that absolutely clear, although it was denied at the time. We know that
now. Well, the incredible thing is that Camel said in the interviews, we destroyed them, but then our news media said, Camel says he has them.
Well, that's right.
So we even have lying there. So, folks, this is an inside look into the highest levels of the British government. Michael Meacher and his colleagues, they literally thought that the intelligence agencies, MI6 and Blair, were telling them the truth. They were still against invading because they didn't think that he'd, violated the agreements or that it was a big enough threat. But still, they believed it. And now, has this been a learning process, Mr. Meacher, for yourself and others? I mean, I know it's been a learning process for us here, that the government would knowingly, because we've got our own memos, we've got our own documents, not just the Downing Street memos, where they premeditatedly, I mean, we've got Rumsfeld memos where he says, even if Saddam's out, even if there's no weapons, we need to go ahead and invade to use that as a launch base. We have the PNAC documents, September 2000, where they say even if Saddam isn't there, as you mentioned earlier, we need to go ahead and invade that country to dominate the region. So we have the PNAC boys admitting before the fact what it was all about. Then we have their own documents conferring between 10 Downing Street and the White House on the eve of the war about we got to manufacture some evidence so this isn't illegal. I mean, we have got them. We have caught them red-handed. Why is Blair still in power? Why hasn't Bush been impeached?
Well, those are absolutely, absolutely central questions. We do know now that the decision to go to war was taken at the Crawford Ranch in April 2002 when Blair came across and saw Bush. And at least an informal understanding was made between them that the United States intended to go to war against Iraq and that Britain would give support. I think that that is not now challengeable. Both sides, both in the US and the UK, denied that a decision had been taken until virtually on the eve of the war. So they were not honest about their intentions. They tried to conceal them because they knew that those intentions would probably not have the support of either the American or the British nation. And as you rightly said, they continued to try and bring forward evidence which justified a political decision which had already been taken.
Now, we'll be right back.
Hey, Jack Blood here from Deadline Live. You know, it seems people will steal anything and everything you have. If you have a house with some equity, a car, a truck, RV, there is someone looking for a way to rip it off. And what about those government agencies? You know, the ones, those alphabet agencies. Did you know that they get raises, promotions, and bonuses based on what they see? And they can do it without due process. This is how the establishment has been attaining real wealth for centuries. And now you can learn the secrets that the elite have used for generations. Wealth-hiding secrets of the elite are exposed in this best-selling book, Bulletproof Asset Protection. Find out how you can make it look like you have no equity in your property, or make it look like you own no property, and a whole lot more. Order the book and DVD now for one low price. Get Bulletproof Asset Protection now. Call them 888-240-3337. That's 888-240-3337. Or go to assetprotectionteam.com. Tell them you heard it on GCN.
The war on terrorism, will it be fought overseas or will it affect us here at home? If you are like most folks, you want to be prepared, but can't afford an underground shelter. So what do you do? Did you know that you can use your home as a shelter against fallout and biological or chemical attacks? With a little know-how, it's not that difficult. Sheltering in Place, Surviving Acts of Terrorism from Biological, Chemical, and Radioactive Fallout, developed by Wayne LeBaron, a health physicist who has served as a specialist in environmental health, communicable diseases, and has worked as a nuclear specialist for the U.S. government, gives you easy-to-follow video instructions and walks you step-by-step through the process of preparing your home as a shelter. Get this critical video every American needs for only $29 plus shipping. Order by calling New Millennium today at 888-803-4438. That's 888-803-4438. Or order on the web at BerkeyWater.com.
Here it is, folks, the 2006 Red Book, the most comprehensive edition ever published. Midas Resources believes our clients should be as informed as possible. It includes a history of U.S. coins, the actual mintages, the grading standards. Learn the stability of real money. Protect yourself from fiat currencies. They are instruments of debt. Feel the comfort and safety of real money. Midas will send you the 2006 Red Book and a genuine silver dollar for just $22.95 delivered. Call Midas today at 1-800-686-2237. That's 1-800-686-2237. Don't be lost in a sea of confusion. Get the 2006 Red Book. Help steer your own financial ship. Call Midas now, 1-800-686-2237.
David J. Smith for Newswatch Magazine. Patrick Henry said, "Give me liberty or give me death." Did you know that he also forced the adoption of the Bill of Rights as a part of the Constitution of 1787 to guarantee your unalienable or unchangeable rights of freedom of speech, freedom of religion, and freedom to own a gun to protect our nation from tyranny? There is now an assault upon the unalienable, unchangeable rights to deprive you of them. We'd like to help you understand why these things are happening by offering you an absolutely free one-year subscription to Newswatch Magazine. Just call 1-800-516-8736. That's 1-800-516-8736. The call is free. Our operators are standing by to take your order for a year subscription to Newswatch Magazine.
The Genesis Communications Radio Network proudly presents The Alex Jones Show, because there's a war on for your mind.
We're talking to Michael Meacher, Member of Parliament, formerly with the Blair government. We're going to be taking your calls coming up in the next segment. For Mr. Meacher, who's been kind enough to join us today, this hour is going to blast past. 1-800-259-9231 is the toll-free number to join us on air. Before we slammed into that last break, Mr. Meacher, I posed the question, why isn't Blair out of government? Why hasn't Bush been impeached? I mean, if they'll lie to us premeditatedly, folks, I mean, we have the documents where you know, we got a lot of the people. They're talking about it, planning it like criminals. And I guess you can answer the question for England. I don't know if I can answer the question here, but can you please elaborate on that for us?
Well, after these facts began to come out in the months after the end of the war, and when the insurgency was getting worse, and when clearly there was very little planning for the reorganization of Iraq, there were intense questions asked in the British Parliament, because we do have question time when we can question ministers, including the Prime Minister, but we did not have a debate. Because it is the government that controls the agenda in the House of Commons, and they frankly declined demands to have a debate to discuss the matter formally in the Parliament. In the end, the only debate that has taken place since the end of the war in April 2003, more than 2 years ago, occurred in July 2004, that is 15 months after the end of the war. It was just before Parliament went into recess for the summer, and it was a very short debate, which ended at 7 in the evening, not as normally at 10 o'clock. And above all, under a particular part of the parliamentary procedure, it wasn't a debate on a resolution, namely that the government stands condemned for this and that, or the government has acted well on behalf of this and that, and people vote according to what they think at the end. There was no resolution put down for debate. It was just an open-ended discussion on Iraq.
So what
and
message?
It ended, crucially, without any vote. There has never been a vote in the British Parliament since the end of the Iraq War. That, I believe, is an astonishing failure of accountability.
Well, over here it's worse. They have debates about funding every 6 months and only increase the funding for this illegal, immoral war. And I don't know if you're aware of Pentagon documents like P2OG, but Rumsfeld actually talks about wanting things to be bad, wanting to balkanize. I mean, all empires try to seek to divide and conquer, and they want Iraq to be a miserable failure. That's actually a big win for the Anglo-American establishment led by the neocons. But here we've had them continually for 2 years plus reauthorize the funding for this, and now there's really no discussion of how we were lied to about WMDs, and Bush and members of his cabinet, Rumsfeld, have gotten up on TV and said it was never about WMDs. You know, you mentioned Richard Pearl. I mean, how stupid do they think we are to say Rumsfeld says it's an urban legend that he never said that, and then we've got hundreds of clips of him saying it? I mean, this really seems to be a new level of just cavalier, arrogant lying.
Well, these are very powerful words you use, but it is very difficult to deny them. I think both in the U.S., I really cannot speak, of course, about the U.S., but in the U.K., there has been a centralization of power around the executive, particularly around the Prime Minister, to a degree that I don't think we have probably known over the last century. I think the degree of patronage which is in the hands of the Prime Minister, the capacity to hire and fire according to loyalty, the control of documents, the capacity to appoint committees of inquiry. There were, of course, committees of inquiry in this country about the Iraq War. The first involved a committee led by someone called Lord Hutton, which was widely regarded as a whitewash. The second was run by the former head of the civil service, Lord Butler. But, of course, all the membership was actually chosen by the Prime Minister. And it clearly, although it was a very rigorous analysis of what was wrong with the war, there were virtually no recommendations for accountability about who should be responsible or who should be stood down because of it. And when we have the select committees of the House of Commons, which are the most powerful committees investigating it, the Foreign Affairs Select Committee, of course, does not have access to the secret intelligence data. The one committee that does have access to the secret intelligence data is, again, personally chosen by the Prime Minister.
We got to break again.
It reports to him, and he has a right to edit the document before it's made public.
Unbelievable. We got a break. We'll be right back.
We're on the march. The Empire's on the run. Alex Jones and the GCN Radio Network.
The 5th Annual Seniors Expo is coming to Mystic Lake Casino Hotel September 19th and 20th. Door prizes, free drawings, and nonstop fun. Featuring the Ms. Minnesota Senior Pageant, Dr. Dale Anderson, who prescribes laughter for health, the Plymouth Playhouse Church Basement Ladies, the Silver Sneakers, and more. Learn all about the new Medicare prescription plan from the Social Security Administration. See a fashion show. Have fun with the Bees and Mariner and the Magic Man. There's something new every hour. All this, plus hundreds of products, drawings, and fantastic giveaways. The 5th Annual Seniors Expo celebrates all that's good about getting older. It's all happening at Mystic Lake Casino Hotel, September 19th and 20th. For discount tickets, visit 101expos.com or call 612-798-7256. Sponsored in part by Mystic Lake Casino Hotel, KSTC, KSTP, Medica, and Ebenezer. Save the date, September 19th and 20th at Mystic Lake.
More than 700 chemicals have been found in our drinking water. And did you know that you can have greater exposure to these chemicals by taking hot showers than when you drink the water? That's because many chemicals are inhaled when they evaporate, and others are absorbed through the skin. The KDF shower filter is designed to reduce chlorine, lead, mercury, and iron, and it inhibits the growth of bacteria, mold, algae, and fungus in your shower. The media is non-toxic, environmentally sound, and is recyclable. The KDF shower filter will typically last 10,000 gallons or 1 year, whichever comes first. Hospitals, restaurants, and water treatment facilities use this media to reduce chlorine, iron, heavy metals, and bacteria. What about you? Order your KDF shower filter, normally $49, for our special price of only $35, a $14 savings. Call now to order at 1-888-803-4438. Order today and save $14 by calling 1-888-803-4438.
Why continue to suffer from pain, illness, and disease when natural health and wellness therapies are within your reach? Hundreds of people report improved health and wellness using the Rife frequency technology. In the 1920s, research scientist Royal Raymond Rife discovered that disease organisms can be destroyed using resonant frequencies. The BioSolutions frequency instrument uses this same technology for relief or elimination of pain and disease conditions. There are no side effects. Join others in discovering a return to natural health and wellness. Don't just treat symptoms, eliminate the cause. BioSolutions has over 550 pre-programmed auto sequences for various health conditions and is very easy to use. Customer satisfaction is guaranteed or your money back. For more information, call Alternative Technologies toll free 866-885-6625. 866-885-6625. One more time, that's 866-885-6625.
Coming up here in a few minutes, we're going to let you talk to Michael Meacher. If you got a question or a comment for him, 1-800-259-9231. I mean, there's so many questions that I could ask, and I know there's so many that you could bring up, and we've only got about 25 minutes left, so we'll have to kind of limit the length or the detail of the answers. But, Mr. Meacher, I mean, reading your The War on Terror is Bogus article, you basically spell out all the connections between the Bushes and the Bin Ladens and the PNAC group and, you know, these top generals and NORAD standing down. And then now we have Paul Craig Roberts, who was the number two at the Department of the Treasury, going public. We have Morgan Reynolds, who was number two at the Department of Labor, their chief economist, going public and saying the way the towers fell is impossible. You have Blair and all this political trouble over Iraq. Then the tragic London bombings happen, and then his approval ratings get a boost. And he says, see, this is why we're in Iraq. Meanwhile, it turns out that a MI6-controlled minion this ASWAT guy was protected and is being protected by MI6. And then when they finally grab him, they say, oh, this is over immigration. We're not going to question him about the bombings, even though he made phone calls to both groups of supposed bombers. I mean, they're at your house after we did that interview. You started talking a little bit more about 9/11. Tell us from all the evidence what Michael Meacher really thinks about 9/11.
Well, I think there are three questions about 9/11, which I can raise, but I cannot fully answer, and of course it is for the Bush administration to provide the answers. The first is, how is it that the Bush administration so completely failed to take account of the enormous amount of evidence before 9/11? No one said that there was going to be an attack with planes on the towers that morning, but the, well, let me just quote what was actually said by John Loftus, that the information, John Loftus being the former U.S. federal crimes prosecutor, and this is what he said: the information provided by European intelligence services prior to 9/11 was so extensive that it is no longer possible for either the CIA or FBI to assert a defense of incompetence. We know that Mossad had produced evidence about 200 extremists, Islamic persons in the United States who were clearly for watching. That included actually the names of four of the hijackers who were among the 20 or the 19 on the day. None of them were arrested. None of them were found. There was the evidence of the 20th hijacker, Massawi, who was captured because he was asking questions about flying heavy airliners, which were very suspicious. The FBI said that they didn't want his computer examined. It is known now that it did contain some evidence which might have given leads to 9/11. Why is it that none of that was sufficiently followed up? That's point one. Point two is, how on the day when the hijack was first suspected between 8:10 and 8:20 a.m., and the last hijacked aircraft crashed into in Pennsylvania at about just after 10 o'clock, that's an hour and 40 minutes, no single fighter plane was scrambled to investigate from the U.S. Andrews Air Force Base, which is only 10 miles away from Washington, D.C., until after the third plane had hit the Pentagon at 9:38. And one just have to ask a question, why not? America is the most advanced military technological society in the world. For an hour and 20 minutes, no plane was put into the air. When you have F-16s, world-class fighter planes, only 10 miles away. I cannot answer that question, but it does need to be answered.
Well, another question is, why did the White House call Mayor Willie Brown the night before and say, don't fly to New York? Why did they call some of the Joint Chiefs of Staff the night before and tell them, don't fly to New York? Why did CIA link companies do insider trading put options, specifically on United and American, at record levels? Why was the head of Pakistani intelligence, who wired $100,000 to the supposed lead hijacker, Mohammed Atta, why was he having breakfast with the heads of the House and Senate Intelligence Committee? Why did Bush have the orders on his desk to launch attacks on Afghanistan 2 days before 9/11? There are hundreds and hundreds of these points, and you hit the nail on the head. Bush said they had never heard of a plan to fly planes into buildings when they had specific reports on their desk weeks before, and everybody knew about it. So again,
It was known as early as 1996, which is 5 years before, that there were plans to hit Washington targets with aeroplanes. In 1999, a U.S. National Intelligence Council report noted, and I quote, Al-Qaeda suicide bombers could crash land an aircraft packed with high explosives into the Pentagon, the CIA, or the White House. That was written by the U.S. National Intelligence Council in 1999. There was such overwhelming evidence, and the key point, I think, is that, of course, 9/11 provided a pretext. It provided a pretext for what they wanted to do all along. Paul O'Neill, the Treasury Secretary, indicated that from the first few days of the Bush administration in January 2001, the argument was not whether they were going to attack Afghanistan, particularly Iraq, but when and how to do it.
And well, Dick Cheney said, find me links.
That's right.
I want to link Iraq to these attacks when patently there were absolutely no connections in anybody's political lexicon.
Absolutely, and the PNAC document, Project for a New America Century, which you commented on, written September 2000, just before Bush came into office, written by the neocons, says that the process of transforming the US into tomorrow's dominant force, which is their phrase, is likely to be a long one in the absence of, and I quote this phrase, which is chilling, in the absence of some catastrophic and catalyzing event, dash, like a new Pearl Harbor.
And Zbigniew Brzezinski...
The 9/11 attacks allowed the U.S. to press the go button for a strategy in accordance with that PNAC agenda, which it would otherwise have been politically impossible to implement. It gave them the pretext to do what they want. That's
sure.
why it's so significant. There's no connection at all between 9/11 and Iraq, but they wanted to take control of Middle East oil, and they wanted the pretext to do it, and that's what 9/11 gave them.
And the incredible thing is that they admit it's about oil and weapon sales, and Bush also told his biographer, if I'm a war president, nobody can question me, so it's about dictatorial powers here in America and across the world. But for those that just joined us, it's important to understand these guys aren't through by a long shot, but before we get into what their future plans may be with Michael Meacher, British Member of Parliament and a former cabinet member with Blair, before we go there, Bush says arrest anybody who's got connections to bin Laden or al-Qaeda. Well, Saddam had no connections to bin Laden or al-Qaeda, but Osama bin Laden literally had hundreds of connections back into the 70s to the Bushes and airports and oil companies. And into 2000 and 2001, and Bush flying 161 bin Ladens out of the country 2 days after 9/11 when all air traffic is grounded. I mean, Michael Meacher, can I get a quote from you on the connections between the Bushes and the bin Ladens?
Well, you've said it all. There are very close connections which have been spelled out in many documents, spelled out in books. The Bush family, the Bush father, grandfather, and the bin Ladens are very close. There is absolutely masses of documentary evidence to indicate that. And as you say, how in those circumstances, immediately after the atrocity on 9/11, all the members of his family, I'm sure the vast majority or nearly all of them knew nothing about it, but they may well have had evidence which was crucial to the American authorities in tracking down those who were responsible, but they weren't questioned. Why? Because the Bush administration did not want 9/11 investigated. It had happened, it gave them politically, militarily what they wanted, and they didn't want anyone investigating their errors, their failures in the period leading up to it, or the quite extraordinary disorganization failure on the day. They just wanted to take advantage of what had happened.
But, I mean, if you fail, and then mathematically it's many times, you know, greater chance that it was on purpose. I mean, if they stand to gain from it, and then they, quote, have a million screw-ups in perfect order, it doesn't look like failures to me.
Well, that, of course, is when you get into the whole question of conspiracy theory versus cock-up. I have to tell you, from my long political experience, I'm a great believer in cock-up. It nearly always is cock-up. However, having said that, it is certainly true in history that conspiracies do occur. Now, whether in this particular case there was a degree of facilitation of this is not something I'm going to comment on. Many people believe that that is true, and I absolutely agree that the evidence is quite comprehensive. It is pointing in a particular direction, but it is basically for the Bush administration to answer these central questions.
But
and what really angers me is the Keene Commission, which is the national approved body for investigating this, is, in my opinion, very largely a complete whitewash.
Well, it's appointed by Bush. I mean, how is it independent if it's appointed by Bush?
Well, that's true, but also, for those who've read it, as I have, it is only the first chapter which goes into what happened in detail on the day. It raises several questions, but it doesn't answer them. And on the crucial question, for example, I mean, you were mentioning the whole question of you mentioned Mr. Aswat, who is thought to be behind the London bombings, and the failure to question him because it is alleged by John Loftus that perhaps he is a British double agent. I mean, I don't know whether he is or not, but the fact is he's not been questioned. There is another Pakistani called Omar Sheikh, who is now in prison in Pakistan under threat of death for the murder of Daniel Pearl, a US journalist, even though the American authorities, the FBI and Pearl's widow, don't believe that he was responsible. But the key point is that he is the person who is allegedly the one who was told by the head of the Pakistani Secret Intelligence Service to wire $100,000 to Mohammed Atta, the leading 9/11 hijacker, just before the attacks. That's been confirmed by Dennis Lorimel, who is the director of the FBI's Financial Crimes Unit. But the astonishing thing is that Omar Sheikh has never been brought to trial for what he knows about 9/11. I mean, why is it that Sybil Edmonds, who is this translator in the FBI, who has a great deal of relevant information, she says she's now under two gag orders. There's Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, who's supposed to be the leading organizer for bin Laden, who has was arrested in Rawalpindi 2 years ago, never been brought to trial. I mean, he must know a great deal about 9/11. Why isn't he brought into public trial? Why isn't Omar Sheikh extradited to the United States, put on trial, and forced to reveal all he knows about 9/11?
Well, they can't, because they're intelligence agency bagmen for the West who were funding and orchestrating attacks that would then be able to bring in this one-world government that the neocons are trying to set up. I mean, that's where all the evidence points for me, Mr. Meacher. Let me digress for a second into the bigger picture. Where are these neocons going from the writings that you've read that they've put out, from their own statements? I mean, I don't think they're done. I don't think they're quitters. Just because they've been caught lying and stealing and insider trading, they're not going to stop. I mean, I see them trying to go into Iran by hook or crook. What do you say?
I think you're absolutely right that the neocons are utterly ruthless. And despite all the reverses that have happened in Iraq, I certainly think they have their eyes on a further vision, and it may well involve Iran. I did quote the PNAC document, which says that the U.S. bases are necessary in the Middle East, quote, because Iran may well prove as large a threat to U.S. interests as Iraq has. Now, that certainly suggests that Iran may well be in their sights, and I'm quite sure that both for military, political, and above all energy, i.e. hydrocarbon oil reasons, the neocons intend to have permanent control, or at least for a very long period ahead, in the Middle East. And once again, we are looking for a pretext. And I think if a pretext were to happen, whatever that might be, I think we could see the possibility of an attack on Iran. I'm sure that it isn't going to be a military invasion like there was in Iraq, but the attempt to destabilize what is seen as the authoritarian rule of the mullahs,
but then
replaced by a more pro-democratic and pro-U.S. Government in Iran.
But then if Iran... But if Israel or the U.S. strikes Iran and they strike back, that is then going to be used as the pretext to have a full-out invasion. And the globalists are beating the drum here. The neocons are beating the drum here, saying that they do want to invade Iran and laying out all of their different reasons of, you know, why this is going to be just so wonderful. But look, I look at Mossadegh. I mean, it's now declassified, publicly admitted, no debate. The U.S. government, at the request of British Petroleum, formerly Anglo-American Oil, openly blew up mosque and shot people and blamed it on Mossadegh to take him out of power. Our government openly attacked the USS Liberty with Israel to blame it on Egypt. I've had the admirals on, the former chairman joint chiefs on. I mean, this is all... I mean, I've talked to the people on air when LBJ said, I want that ship going to the GD bottom. So I Michael, I've caught them over and over again pulling stuff, and I think they'll either finance some terrorists who don't even know who's financing them, like Gladio and other operations, or I think they'll carry out operations. Your comments.
I think the degree to which the U.S. government uses proxies, for example, getting Islamic jihadists to fight in Afghanistan against the Soviet Union, then using again another jihadi corps against the Bosnian Muslim to fight for the Bosnian Muslims to weaken the Serb government's hold on Yugoslavia. I think that is a major reason why we have seen this push by many of the Islamic jihadists into Western Europe. But I entirely agree with you that if you look at the PNAC document and other published documents which are in the public domain, I would see the PNAC document as being, frankly, a manifesto for U.S. world domination. It is really extraordinary. It talks about spotlighting China for regime change, saying it's time to increase the presence of American forces in Southeast Asia. It talks about creating U.S. space forces to dominate space.
Gotta break again. Gotta break again. We'll be right back.
What really happened September 11th, and who stands to gain? Alex Jones here, America. We answer these vital questions and much, much more in my newest and most explosive documentary yet, 911, The Road to Tyranny. In 2 hours and 24 minutes, we point a searing light of truth on the history of problem-reaction-solution. Brace yourselves as the New World Order program for world domination is blown wide open. A nightmarish post-September 11th world where the military and the police are merged. Witnesses' populations beg for national ID cards and, yes, even implantable microchips. Troops on the streets, foreign NATO aircraft in the skies. Psychotic UN population control plans, and much, much more. This is one film you cannot afford to miss. Order 911, The Road to Tyranny today. Call toll-free 1-888-253-3139. That's 1-888-253-3139. Or order online at InfoWars.com or InfoWars.net. You see, Big Brother's afraid of this documentary. Order today and spread the word. America's future depends on the truth getting out.
The Berge Light is your premier source for purified water. It's portable and requires no water pressure, so you can enjoy healthy drinking water, whether it's during normal times or hostile environments like a local or national emergency. That's because it can purify raw, untreated water from remote lakes and stagnant ponds. The Berge Light is unique because it removes pathogenic bacteria, cyst parasites, and harmful chemicals to below detectable levels. It also removes foul taste and odors like the rotten egg smell of sulfide, and it extracts nitrates and unhealthy minerals like lead and mercury while leaving in the healthful and nutritional minerals that your body needs. The Berkey Light's rechargeable LED lighting system is so bright it can be used as a reading light. Get the Berkey Light for only $259 by calling New Millennium at 888-803-4438 and tell them Alex Jones sent you. That's toll-free 888-803-4438 or order on the web at berkeywater.com. Not yet available in Iowa.
Herbal Healer Academy is a global supplier of the finest natural medicine that you may need in these troubled times. We specialize in keeping you alive and healthy. We provide outstanding products like ECAC, colloidal silver 500 parts per million, olive leaf extract, oregano oil, and hundreds of herbals, oils, books, and educational materials. We have homeopathic detox solutions for contrails, radiation, MSG, and aspartame poisoning, to name a few. We also train naturopathic healers via correspondence education. For a limited time, you can sign up on the website and receive our 104-page catalog and a current Herbal Healer newsletter free. Simply log on to herbalhealer.com. Check out our online member testimonials and our hundreds of exceptional products. We have been working hard since 1988 to save the remnant. That's herbalhealer.com, your website for safe, effective, natural alternatives and education.
Welcome back. We need to be clear here that when we talk about an American empire, we mean these big globalist private interests that are actually deindustrializing our country,
that are actually setting up a police state. So many Americans I talk to think that they're going to be part of the empire. They think, oh, yeah, it's an empire. Yeah, we need that oil. I mean, now on neocon radio, it's just like a pack of criminals. And we need to be clear that, you know, empires, you can't always blame their populations because these empires manufacture consent. It's like in 1775, 1776, when the King of England, George III, went to Parliament. And about 40% of Parliament voted against him. But the other 60% said, yeah, let's go to war. And they had a disastrous eight-year war. Well, it's the same thing today. We have an imperial group that thinks that America's energies and England's energies are here for their own private financial gains. And they're ruthless. They're dangerous. They've got to be stopped. Michael Meacher's agreed to stay 5 minutes in the next hour so we can take calls. Really appreciate him. Skyler, Wayne, and others, we're about to go to your calls. But just briefly, I've got to ask this question, Michael Meacher. When you were about to resign, did Tony Blair try to stop you from leaving his government? Or after you resigned, did he say something to you?
No. There was, of course, intense concern before the debate as to what members of the government would do, and indeed whether the Labour Party would actually have a majority in the House of Commons, because, of course, the government was actually backed by the Conservative opposition. If the Conservative opposition had voted against the government on that night, then actually the government would not have had a majority at all. But there was very great concern that we were winning a vote on the basis of the support from the opposition and not on the basis of support within our own party. So there was an enormous amount of discussion and clearly pressure which was put through the whips, who are the party managers in the House, to make sure that everyone supported the government. But I have to say, I was not personally approached by Tony Blair. And indeed, immediately afterwards, these things had happened.
Talked to Blair since then?
Sorry?
Have you ever talked to Blair since then?
Yes. Yes, I have. I've had quite a lengthy conversation, I suppose, which was about a whole variety of issues, including Britain's, what I would see, a fairly sycophantic attitude towards the United States. We want to be strong allies. We clearly share the same values and principles and the kind of civilization we have. But I believe that Britain, as other countries, should be prepared to say to an American administration that on this occasion, we think you're wrong, and we're not prepared to support you. And that is exactly what I think we should have said on this
occasion.
Well,
the argument is, we bailed you out from Hitler, so you better do what we say. That this is completely different.
Well, it is absolutely, as you say, first of all, that was 50 years ago. We were all fighting the menace of Nazism in Europe. But I think the idea that because the Americans through Lend-Lease, the Spire Forces, and a great deal of money and support at that time, which of course all of Europe remains deeply grateful for, nevertheless that cannot be a reason for supporting the United States if that administration takes upon itself to act illegally.
Well, the point is that
war.
The point is Hitler was invading countries. Hitler was attacking and bombing London. This is totally different. Saddam had his hands up, begging and groveling.
That's exactly correct.
I mean, so to compare Saddam Hussein to Hitler is a joke.
No, well, I don't think this argument that you may not like going to war over Iraq, but we helped you against Hitler, so you've got to help us in Iraq. I don't think it was ever put in those terms. It's much more.
This broadcast is available on MP3 CD format at GCNLive.com or call toll-free 877-300-7645.